Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We've got some great guests and conversations this morning. In just a minute, I'll play a clip of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and get a reaction from Congressman Anthony Weiner. Weiner is asking Thomas to recuse himself from any case involving the health reform law. We'll hear why. Also today, we'll meet the NYU film student, Luke Matheny, who was such a hit at the Oscars, and we'll hear a clip from his Oscar-winning short. Sam Roberts today on why New York is unique in the census results, plus Princeton professor Melissa Harris-Perry. And for you Melissa Harris-Perry fans, did you know she's leaving Princeton for Tulane? But today she'll talk about women's health and the budget battle, and we'll continue our week-long series asking questions on from the National Standardized Science Test, which our kids are just not very good at in this country. Today, some science test questions about the weather. As the Obama health reform law seems headed for the Supreme Court, a battle is taking shape over whether two of the nine justices should recuse themselves due to conflicts of interest. First, Republican Senator Orrin Hatch said Elena Kagan, appointed by President Obama, should recuse herself because she was Obama's Solicitor General at the time Obama proposed the law. Now, 74 Democrats, led by Brooklyn and Queens Congressman Anthony Weiner, have written a letter arguing that Clarence Thomas should recuse himself, mostly because of his wife's financial stake in the issue, allegedly. We will talk to Congressman Weiner about that and other things in a minute. First, here is a clip of Justice Thomas speaking to a conservative law student symposium in Charlottesville, Virginia, on Saturday night. He addresses the issue of his wife's taking anti-health reform clients and acknowledges that he shares her values. The sound quality is not great here, but since Thomas never speaks from the bench, we'll take what we can get.
My bride is with the Virginia Thomas, and some of you may know her, but the reason I bring that, specifically bring it up, is there is a price to pay today for standing in defense of your Constitution.
A price to pay today for standing in defense of your Constitution. So there's a price to pay for being a conservative lobbyist, by implication, a price to pay for fighting the health reform law, though he didn't actually say that after he introduced his wife in this context. But he affirms that he agrees with her positions.
Maybe that's why we're equally yoked, and we love being with each other because we love the same thing. We believe in the same thing. So with my wife and with the people around me, what I see, I'm reinforced that we are focused on defending liberty. So I admire her and I love her for that because it keeps me going.
Justice Thomas on Saturday, Congressman Anthony Weiner. Now, Congressman, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
Did Thomas cross a line in that speech, in your opinion, that should cause his recusal?
Well, he digs a deeper hole for himself, requiring, I think, under the clear letter of the law, that he has to recuse himself. Even before he made those remarks, it was clear that he had a financial stake in the outcome of the case, which is a clear condition that you should recuse yourself. And let's make it very clear, his spouse has every right in the world to participate in the political process any way she wants and to even make a lot of money doing it. In this case, almost $700,000, at least $700,000, I should say, from organizations and foundations that were working to overturn health care reform. You know, that's money that came into his household he's already gotten, and frankly, his wife still works as a lobbyist and as a grassroots organizer trying to overturn the constitutionality of the thing. The fact that he further goes on to say that we're both yoked in this view in defense of liberty, by implication, I guess I'm against liberty because I believe in having this law upheld on its constitutionality. And what's important to remember here, and this is why, you know, we have this website, conflictedclarencethomas.com, where we post all the documents that show the conflict that Clarence Thomas has, and over 300,000 people have signed a petition asking him to recuse himself. The difference here is that if indeed there is a conflict, there's no place to appeal. Like, it's not like a lower court. If you violate Title 28, which is the, where the part of the law that says how you, how and when you have to recuse himself, if he chooses not to do this, they're the highest court in the land, so the standard should be extra tough. And it's clear in this case that it's not on the level. If Clarence Thomas sits in judgment of this case, given how much money his spouse has made and his household has made trying to overturn the constitutionality of this, given that he said now publicly that he basically agrees with her, I think most Americans won't believe the decision's on the level.
Is Ginny Thomas's work specifically with respect to overturning the health reform law, or are her clients like the Heritage Foundation just general conservative clients, and that happens to be one of their positions?
Well, in the case of the Heritage Foundation, it's more general, but in the case of two organizations that she's gotten money from, the Liberty Consulting and something called Liberty Central, they're lobbying kind of astroturf organizations who are raising money talking about her connections to help them influence this process. These astroturf groups have been founded solely for the purpose of stopping health care reform from happening, and now have transitioned into raising a lot of money, advertising their influence in trying to stop it from ever taking effect, because having it constitutionally struck down. I mean, this is about as clear a test, and just so your listeners understand, there's a law here, and it says, it's Title 28 of the U.S. Code, that says that if there's a financial interest in the subject matter of either the person or his spouse, he has to recuse himself. And so there's not even any dispute. Now, I should point out the information only became public recently because for 13 years, Justice Thomas, on his financial disclosures, failed to disclose the income of his spouse. And that adds even further suspicion that they were trying to keep it private. But it certainly is pretty clear that the perception is there of conflict. With that perception comes a requirement to recuse.
Now, let me ask, do you really believe Thomas should recuse himself, or is this just rhetorical pushback for Senator Hatch suggesting first that Elena Kagan should recuse herself because she was Obama's Solicitor General? Would you make the deal today that nobody recuses themselves and both sides retreat?
Well, no, because first of all, I'm not sure what the tic-tac was. I thought that Hatch responded to our call, but you may have the timeline correct.
Or I could be wrong.
But the fact is that Kagan has recused herself from more than half the cases before her, and it has made it very clear in each instance why she has done that. She was asked during her confirmation hearings, had she been involved in any way with health care reform? She was not the Solicitor General when it became law. Had she been involved in any way? And she said that she had attended one meeting, which it was not the central point of the meeting, and she had no role in the drafting or defending of the law. She's made it very clear, and not only that, she's done it right. More than 50% of the cases she's recused herself from. I have to tell you this, it is clear to me that Clarence Thomas has a conflict here. If someone wants to make an equal case on Kagan, they're free to do it, but so far the facts don't bear it out.
Here's one more clip from Thomas's speech at UVA on Saturday night. According to Politico, which I think obtained the tape, he's referring to the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, which is what President Obama uses to justify the individual mandate. And Thomas laments the general expansion of the Commerce Clause over time.
I do think these are fundamental changes that are going on. And I think they're big changes. And as Professor Nelson asked, I don't know whether they're going to be irreversible in any way, or indeed, I have no idea. But they're so big that I think they're worth trying. And I think the document's so important it's worth defending.
Justice Thomas. But again, he doesn't quite go there, Congressman Wiener, by taking a position on the Commerce Clause and the individual mandate specifically. He seems to lament, as many conservatives do, the general expansion of the Commerce Clause, which is supposed to regulate interstate commerce to cover many things. So are you attempting to close that loop?
No. I am saying that it is another read of this field of appearances of conflict. Look, one thing is for sure is that Justice Thomas is being reckless in adding to the fuel of speculation that he's already made up his mind about this. He went and gave this speech. He went out of his way to mention his association and his pride in his wife and the fact that he agrees with her. Then he goes and talks about the Commerce Clause. I don't believe that justices should be silent. I don't believe that they shouldn't go and speak at functions. But I do believe that it's an extraordinarily important thing that they not give the impression that they're engaging in politics. Ever since Bush v. Gore in 2000, I think many Americans have wondered if the Supreme Court was just the third political branch of government. And he has been reckless in reinforcing that concern. That particular line, the fact that he's concerned about the growth of the Commerce Clause, it's not unusual for justices to give speeches where they talk about thematic things like that. Frankly, you know, if he had ever spoken from the bench, he could say that kind of thing from the bench. Mm-hmm. I do believe the accumulated information, the money that his spouse has received, the fact that they failed to disclose it for so many years, the fact that she continues to advertise her connections, a way that people should give money, the fact that if this thing is struck down, she stands to gain a great deal, and the fact that there is no way to appeal his decision if he decides either gets this wrong or decides not to recuse himself, makes it a pretty clear case that he should recuse.
Congressman Wiener calling for Justice Thomas to recuse himself on health care constitutional issues. On the constitutional question, on the individual mandate, can we really say that the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, which regulates interstate commerce, allows the government to tell individuals that they must buy something? That's interstate commerce?
Well, the fact is, I mean, first of all, no one disputes in this entire conversation that health care nowadays is an interstate question. Your health care follows you when you travel. Companies operate over state lines, despite the mythology that they don't. We have government programs that cover health care. So there's no doubt that it's interstate commerce. Then the question becomes, does the fact that it's interstate commerce mean that anything that's interstate commerce you can control? People, by acting to not get health insurance, are participating in interstate commerce, even though they haven't chosen to do so. The fact that they're not is saying, I want everyone else to pay for my emergency health care costs if I don't have insurance. So that failure to purchase health care is indeed an action. You know, people say, well, I'm just sitting here minding my own business. But no, when you decide, you, even though you're given a subsidy to buy insurance, even though you're given opportunities to do it with the new exchange, if you choose to still not do it, you're actively making the decision to have someone else cover your health care costs. That decision puts you right in the middle of this national discussion. And so I believe the constitutionality of it, which doesn't mean there aren't arguments on both sides, and I believe that ultimately it will wind up in the Supreme Court.
All right. One more thing before you go. Entirely unrelated. You've been calling for the removal of a very offensive statue in New York City, and people are tweeting about this and emailing articles about it like crazy. For our listeners who haven't heard about this, what is this offending work of so-called art?
Well, it is. First, I'm glad it started a conversation when I proposed that this be sold on Craigslist or eBay. And obviously, I was trying to get that conversation started. It's a piece of art dating from the 1920s that until 1941 was outside City Hall when Fiore LaGuardia said, this thing is ugly, move it out of Manhattan, and they put it in Queens, something that many of us resent. It is called Civic Virtue, and it's a muscular 20-foot tall guy with his foot on two women, and the women are supposed to be, I think, vice and corruption. It is an allegory from a bygone era when the allegory of women of being weak and women of being more prone to vice is no longer relevant in today's life. It is a sexist allegory, and it's a sexist statue, and it's fallen into disrepair, and some people have suggested fixing it up. I think we should take it out of the public square. I don't believe that this is about whether or not people should be allowed to have art or even show art. I just think it's about the changing values of our society, particularly when women are under assault in Washington and their very freedoms are under assault. The idea that civic virtue should be depicted by a man standing on women, I think, is offensive.
It's so blatant, showing a man as civic virtue and women as corruption and vice. I mean, it's so blatant. But what should actually be done with it? You don't want the government to be in the business of destroying a work of art.
Of course not. And that's why, you know, if we want to take it someplace and see if someone who would appreciate it maybe as a period piece or as an example of how our values and mores have changed through time, I am very pro-art. I would like something else to be there, or maybe even, you know, some kind of a place place that we go and take a look at things that are no longer appropriate. The same way if it was a racist statue from a bygone period or Native Americans, you know, being portrayed in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I just think that it's, you know, by the way, it's right at the intersection of Union Turnpike and Queens Boulevard outside Borough Hall. So we've really given it a prominent place. And I think it's about time we at least have a conversation about whether it reflects our values today.
Congressman Anthony Weiner, Democrat from Brooklyn and Queens. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.